This is The Adam Ritz Show, a public affairs talk show touching on community, health, foundations, and more. The Adam Ritz Show is underwritten by Vibonomics, an audio out-of-home advertising marketplace and audio experience company. Info at Vibonomics.com. And now, from the Vibonomics studios, please welcome your public affairs radio host, Adam Ritz.
Hey, everybody. Adam Ritz here with you. Jay Baker on the phone. This is The Adam Ritz Show, and we cover public affairs coast to coast. Are you ready to go, Jay?
I am ready. I love public affairs. And this is the one show on radio. Other radio shows will claim they care about you, but we truly do.
We do. In fact, that's one of our slogans. You know the website Charity Navigator? You've brought them up several times on previous episodes and how fantastic they are.
They really are good, yes.
Just for a little recap for our listeners, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but give us a little recap of what Charity Navigator does and who they are.
Well, one thing that Charity Navigator does is it helps authenticate that the organizations that you're giving to are legit. A little known fact about giving, you know, because somebody will call up and say, we have an organization and it's Kids for Pets, let's just say. And, you know, when you give us money, we help kids and we help pets. Well, you know, you hear all the feel good words, but you and I know, does it really benefit children and pets? I want to know more. Charity Navigator has been one of those companies that said every organization has to have a bona fide name. And I thought that was great. So you can't just come up with a catchy catchphrase. You have to have an organization that is properly licensed 501c3. And Charity Navigator helps identify those organizations. And then you have better information as to whether you'd like to give or not. It's not that you don't want to have to help kids and pets. You may be giving it away to, I don't know, organized criminals. So I think that's what I like the best about Charity Navigator.
Oh, yeah. They're just a great way to just to double check where your money is going to a legitimate cause. And they also rank charities and foundations because there are a lot of real foundations that their operating costs are just so high that only a small amount of the money you're giving is going to go to the cause of pets or kids. So they'll actually rank a legitimate foundation and say, you know, they're good. They do give money to pets and kids, but only 30% of the money goes because they operate at a 70% overhead. So they will rank these charities just to help you out to make sure you know your dollar's going to a great cause. And their website is charitynavigator.org. And Jay, they were just in the news this week because they just announced a program called Causeway. It's a unique platform designed to simplify your giving and increase your donor impact on the causes that you care about. It's called Causeway. And a little more explanation about the Causeway is that they've used their own Charity Navigator expert analysts who have carefully selected the most effective and efficient charities, and they've grouped them together so that, like, let's say, Jay, you bring up pets and kids. That's what the causes are that you like the most. You can go to the Causeway on charitynavigator.org, put in pets and kids, and it will instantly populate the, you know, 10 charities or so that would be best for you and in your giving and your choices for where you want your charitable donations to go.
So, see, that's great.
Yeah, then you don't have to do the research, you don't have to spend the time, and you can trust it. So, you know, if you could spend an hour on your own time to try to find 8 or 7 charities you want to support this holiday season, and maybe one or two of them was a little bit more sketch than you'd want them to be, but you know what? You had to go pick up the kids at school. You didn't have time to click on that last website to find out more about the organization. This is a quick and easy way to find a group of charities and foundations that you are interested in supporting that you can trust because it's come from the Kleenex of the business, Charity Navigator.
No, that's really good to know because, you know, if you do believe in these causes, that's kind of what it boils down to. You know, I do find it very interesting that people will link to causes. The classic example for us in the radio business was you would be at some type of charitable event and somebody unexpectedly had some huge health situation, usually brought on by heart disease. Mm-hmm. So then the radio station and the people associated with the event would say, hey, let's next year make this a benefit for the Heart Association because, you know, this incident occurred. We want to highlight the fact that heart health and general health is very important. Well, you and I know if you create that cause, you want to make sure that your money's going in the right direction. So if your cause, for whatever reason your cause is, whether it's cancer research or heart disease or whatever, you can find those effective companies that are doing something positive in those concern fields.
The Charity Navigator Causeway launch will include managed charitable funds focused on pressing issues such as hunger, homelessness, animal welfare, global health, global poverty, and education. Each Causeway fund includes a mix of charities using proven strategies from direct services to policy reform, all chosen for maximum impact. So you can find out more by heading to charitynavigator.com/causeway. Congratulations, Charity Navigator, for making our donation dollars a little easier.
Very good. And I think anytime you can mention Charity Navigator, because it's kind of a go-to site for us, and it, I think, has really helped a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, now, Adam, one of the things that we always love to promote is health and well-being, and new research has revealed that practicing some form of mindfulness, which is a word that gets used quite a bit in the workplace, via yoga and other techniques can be an effective buffer against anxiety, stress, and burnout. In fact, Adam, just telling you anxiety, stress, and burnout would describe a typical day for most office workers.
Yeah, I think that's why I see a lot of people here at the radio station in the downward dog position at their desk.
They're usually in some form of position, usually with their hands covering their head, laying it on the desk and sighing heavily.
Yeah, they're just trying to get through the day. And I don't know if they are in the middle of a sales pitch that's gone awry or if they're actually doing yoga.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell from the angle that we look at. But you'll be pleased to know that yoga, which I think a lot of people are big fans of yoga, it's difficult to know where to get started. So we're going to give you a little bit of help. Believe it or not, yoga in a chair has been found to benefit both mind and body. So in my opinion, there's no lower impact than chair yoga.
I do a lot of my exercising in a chair.
You're not the only one. Yeah. Well, and we laugh a little bit about it, but there are some things that you can do. And one of the things that is worth a look up because, and you should always consult with your physician before pursuing any form of health endeavors, whether it be exercise or nutrition. But chair yoga has a low enough impact that merely looking up some of the chair yoga techniques on YouTube will suffice for a number of people because it has been proven to be so helpful.
This marketing and advertising pitch has worked. I guarantee you, before I go to bed tonight, I am going to YouTube search yoga in a chair and see what I can do to stress out or stretch out and relieve my stress while I'm here at work.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot to it. There's some very simple things. When they go back to mindfulness for people that, you know, worry that, hey, now I've got to take this 12-week course on mindfulness. The very simple observation about mindfulness is just being very aware. And you find sometimes when you're stressed and you have anxiety at work, just redirecting yourself back to peace will help a great deal. And it doesn't require lots of training.
I really didn't equate mindfulness to health and fitness until you just brought it up. So now I'm going to try to be more mindful, and maybe it'll help my stress levels.
I'm being as mindful as I can be at this moment, and it's been very, very helpful for me. Here's a story that probably won't surprise you. Nearly a third of Americans have gotten a, quote, sleep divorce. And it has to do with sharing your bed with a partner. In other words, you're in a situation where you are not enjoying sleeping with a partner as much, and that may not be the end of the world. I'm sure that you have several friends in your life that have probably brought this topic up.
So the sleep divorce is you're just not in the same bed. You've got separate bedrooms because you get a better night's sleep.
Basically, what you're saying is, yes, I cannot get enough quality sleep because of the way my partner sleeps. And if you think about it, by sort of hanging in there, you're sort of penalizing yourself. You're interrupting your good night's sleep over something that your partner probably doesn't have a lot of control over. So if they snore and steal the covers and move around a lot, they're probably very unaware of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not intentional when you're almost unconscious and you're sleeping and you are creating a ruckus to the point where your partner can't sleep at all. The sleep divorce seems like a pretty good idea to avoid the divorce.
Yes. Now, this is, you don't want to get an actual divorce. That's expensive and emotionally draining. The American Academy of Sleep Medicine said that about 29% of Americans, according to their surveys, have opted to sleep in another bed or another room from their partner because of differences in sleep habits. Now, that's kind of an interesting note if you think about a different bed, because remember, famously, sitcoms in the 60s and 70s wouldn't have the main characters sleep in a double bed. And in fact, famously, I Love Lucy.
That's right.
Lucy and Ricky both slept in single beds.
It really is amazing to think about how far we came, have come in entertainment with what is allowed for viewers' eyes. Because like you said, in the 50s, they slept in twin beds because they didn't want to imply that these two people were having marital relations, so we should say.
My goodness, yes, that would be awful to think about.
But they didn't think, you know what, every couple on television that has a child would also imply, you know, how did they get the child?
Well, the stork, which is a large bird, brings that baby to in the garden, I believe, is the complete myth. But yes, you are correct. We've come a long way. But apparently, the final word on this story is, most people claim that after their sleep divorce, they're actually happier and less irritable because apparently they now have received the amount of restful sleep that they need.
I don't doubt it. In fact, you and I both know a gentleman who shall remain nameless on this broadcast. He and his wife, this was at least 20 years ago when I learned this, they slept in separate bedrooms. And he actually set up his bedroom as if he were a 7-year-old child. Like he had an NFL lamp and like, you know, the old NFL bedspread with all the logos of the teams. I mean, if you walked into this bedroom, you would think a 7 to 10-year-old boy lived in, you know, had this bedroom. And it was a grown man who just had, I guess, a sleep divorce from his wife because they, one or two, snored too much and they got a better night's sleep sleeping alone. So I guess that's the advice here on this public affairs show. If you're going to try the sleep divorce, have some fun with it. Make your room your room.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That's hilarious. And as you said, it ends up being somewhat of a personal decision. But if the old NFL bedspread can make you sleep better, and usually the old NFL bedspread featured either a Philadelphia or Detroit logo that was at least 25 years old.
Oh, remember? For sure. All the logos were outdated. All that stuff's available on eBay. So, yeah, don't just create an NFL or your favorite sports team bedroom. Go ahead and get on eBay and search vintage and make it look like a bedroom in 1973.
Heck yeah, absolutely. Like Peter Brady would have had.
Absolutely. You know, put a Kiss poster on the wall or Peter Frampton. Get a record player and display your albums.
One of the things that we've applauded on this show is doing something very positive, but thinking outside the box. Now, if you live in a state where marijuana for recreational use is not quite yet in play, you may look at this and go, "Ooh, my state legislatures would throw a gasket over this." But in Rockford, Illinois, where they have cannabis legal for use, a local blood center held a Bleed for Weed event.
As far as names go, that one rolls off the tongue.
That's not bad, is it?
Not a bad name.
At least it kind of catches your attention, yeah. So, like I said, if your state doesn't allow it, you're going to say, no can do. And you're right. The minute I read this one, I went, around where we live, yeah, this wouldn't work. But I thought it was pretty cool because, you know, typically in a blood drive, you get cookies, you get orange juice, you might get a radio station T-shirt. But this particular Bleed for Weed mobile blood drive occurred, and apparently you got a chance to have a little bit of marijuana or an edible in exchange for giving blood.
Well, there is a blood shortage, so you know, I don't know how much we support the use of hallucinogens or narcotics or intoxicants, but we do support giving blood, that's for sure.
Yes, absolutely. This is not a support of the cannabis lifestyle, but if it is legal in your area, you got to give them some kudos for at least thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And of course, this will be the time of the year, you know, the blood drive will feature, you know, the Count Dracula cardboard stand-up, you know, because that's always a great tie-in, you know.
Yeah.
The undead, bring in the blood donors. You know that.
I think a blood drive ties in with Halloween season perfectly.
Yes. Now, we are winding down the summer vacation season, but many people may still be taking some form of vacation. I know that a number of schools have fall breaks and a lot of families try to get away, and there will be some winter vacations. But financial experts are urging Americans to take planning a budget and sticking to it is very important because 36% of Americans say they do plan to take on debt in order to travel.
That, you know, that's a tough one. Because I've managed to build some debt here and there, and the approach is, you only live once. I want to have a great time with my kids while they're young. We're taking this big trip, but the other side of that coin, boy, that debt and the interest rates and the anvil that it ends up being in your lap when you're trying to pay that off and you can't get ahead. That's a tough one. Yeah, you gotta put some real thought into how much debt you want to take on for the kind of trip you want to have with your family.
Absolutely, because the current concern is that any type of Visa or MasterCard debt, right now, the average cards are now charging over 20% interest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've heard up in the 30s. I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of interest that you're paying And nobody really reads the fine print or looks at the bill. You just get the bill every month. You send off a couple $100. You just never get ahead.
Well, especially I think somewhat misleading is the minimum payment, which is, you know, we've talked about some of the financial things. We're not great financial experts ourselves, but the minimum payment is not all that it could and should be. And as Adam said, consult with your banker ahead of time. But yes, kind of a big thing about any upcoming vacations is, if you think about it, a third of Americans are basically stating, hey, I'm going to take on debt to take this trip. And if you can afford to pay it off later, please do. But if it already adds to a tough financial situation, that trip may end up being a little more stressful than you wanted it to be.
I would also encourage a little research on the internet for like-minded or likewise experiences. I mean, if you're looking to, if you'd really like to spend an enormous amount of money taking your family to Hawaii, there's probably a more cost-effective way to get a similar experience near your house. And I'm not saying in your neighborhood, but I'm saying that, you know, there's some California towns that have your driving distance to the beach and the mountains. And you just, and you didn't have to spend the extra X thousand to go in a farther, on a farther flight, farther travel to a more expensive place. Hawaii's hotel rates are astronomical compared to anywhere else. So, you know, maybe there's some other experience you can find near the mountains in California that is driving distance to a beach that ends up costing 70% less than the trip to Hawaii. So just do your research. Talk to a travel agent. They're a great resource to help you get the most bang for your buck on a family trip.
No, I think that is a great point. This is the reason I'm bringing up this story is because I didn't quite think this was possible, so I wanted to get your feelings on this, Adam. I feel like you are a student of life and an observer of the human condition, but okay. This happened in Fremont, Ohio. A driver for the U.S. Postal Service decided to drag race a Ford Mustang.
In his government-issued U.S.
Yes.
Postal Office truck.
This is the part that I did not think was possible because I thought to myself, most of the Postal Service vehicles seem a little, I don't know, you know, not very quick. I mean, you wouldn't think in terms of racing.
No, they don't even seem like real vehicles. I mean, they don't have a real driver's seat. It's on the wrong side of the car. I don't even know if there's an engine inside that little vehicle.
There may not be.
It's a golf cart.
It looks like a fancy golf cart, but in police body cam footage, an officer can be seen pulling over a gentleman by the name of Drew Brown, who was driving a postal van at a speed in excess of 100 miles per hour in a 60 zone.
Well, good for the USPS creating vehicles that go over 100 miles an hour.
that's either impressive or scary. I'm not sure.
Well, when you got to deliver the mail, rain, sleet, or snow, you've got to deliver the mail at a high speed. You
got to get it out there, baby. Yeah. Now he was racing a Mustang. The Mustang apparently slowed down and got away, but Mr. Brown did not. He was given a $240 fine for the traffic violation, and the U.S. Post Office is reviewing the matter. They're either upset or impressed. I'm not sure which it doesn't say.
I'm smelling a promotion. I think he's going to get a bigger neighborhood because he's obviously going to be able to reach more mailboxes in a shorter amount of time.
Yeah. So, but that I just brought that up because I thought, wow, the van that delivers our mail looks like top speed 42 at best.
Yeah. The Mustang, there's no way he's losing that drag race. You just cannot
lose to the mailman. Oh, my goodness. Sir Paul McCartney can now be called officially Sir Billionaire. And the reason why I brought this up, you know, they always talk about the great wealth of musicians, but you never get that properly quantified. Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Well, Sir Paul McCartney has become Britain's first ever billionaire musician. According to the Sunday Times list, which is similar to Forbes, this is the United Kingdom version of it, the net worth for McCartney and his wife Nancy is officially 1 billion with a B, pounds.
1 billion. Wow. You know, if you asked me to guess, when did Paul McCartney become a billionaire? You know, it's a little bit of a loaded question because now, okay, the answer is I know he's a billionaire. If you asked me when, I probably would have guessed at least 5 years ago, not five days ago.
Yeah, you would think, yeah. So this is apparently a new thing. If you translate that to American dollars, that's approximately 1.3 billion U.S. Now, in comparison, and here's the part that I found very interesting about this, other British musicians, because you think, hey, I'm going to mention some heavy hitter names here. Elton John, Mick Jagger, and Keith Richards each have a net worth between 400 million and 500 million pounds. So their worth, while substantial, is only about half of Sir Paul, or Sir Billionaire, if you please.
Well, you do realize Paul McCartney was a member of maybe the best band ever, and I'm talking about Wings.
Yes. we waited for that and we got it. There we go.
So my aunt, she's a huge Beatles fan, total flower child, grew up in the 60s, and we have argued and argued because I actually like Wings better. And she... She thinks I'm crazy, but you want to get a Beatles fan riled up. Tell them that Paul really became famous and successful after the Wings experience.
Yeah, somehow he made it through, as we like to say. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so to me, I always think, wow, they talk about rock star cash, but, you know, that's pretty impressive. A billion plus dollars, and certainly a billion pounds, you know?
It is. And, you know, it's expensive to be a rock star. There's a lot of overhead in the beginning years, in the lean years. You're broke, you're poor, you're living in hotel rooms that don't have enough beds for the band members. You're eating fast food because you don't have any money. Then you hit it big and you go crazy with the expenses, buying lavish homes, cars, lifestyle. There's the drugs and alcohol aspect that makes you waste money. Then there's the businesses they invest in that fail. And so it's a tough road to hoe for a musician, a rock star, to become super elite wealthy, let alone a billionaire.
Yes.
I mean, if it took Elton John 40 plus years to get a net worth of $400 or $500 million, you're not becoming a rock star and getting $50 million in the next couple of years. It's going to take a long time and a lot of hits and a lot of downloads and a lot of clicks. And that's hard to do.
Well, think about how many kids are telling their parents, hey, trust me, I'm going to be a rock star. Well, you and I know that the odds are definitely against you.
It's such a weird industry because you can go to any local pub and hear a band that is actually impressive that is never going to make a dollar. And you might even think, man, this band is better than the Rolling Stones. And the Rolling Stones have made, you know, $1 billion. And this band at your local bar is not going to make a dollar ever. It's right place, right time. It's marketing. It's who you know. There's so many ingredients that go into it. And it's kind of mind-blowing when you stop and think, how it happens for certain groups and how it doesn't for others. Because in pro sports, I mean, you have to have the skill set. You have to have the athletic ability to be a professional athlete. To be a professional rock star, you really don't. I mean, there's some people out there that are famous that can barely sing.
No, your point is well taken.
Okay. There's some people on the radio that can barely speak. Thank you for listening to the Adam Rich Show today. Jay Baker, pleasure having you on. We'll do this again next week for our listeners. If you want to hear any of our shows in podcast form, they're on the website, adamrichshow.com.
The Adam Ritz Show is recorded live in studio at the Vibonomics Worldwide Headquarters. Learn more about the Vibonomics Audio Out-of-Home Marketplace at Vibonomics.com. For information on this broadcast, including past on-demand episodes, interview submissions, and syndication contacts, visit AdamRitzShow.com.